Rape is a crime that has a criminal, and it's not the baby, it's the rapist. Life begins in Christ, therefore, conception is always holy, even if the sex is not.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Victor Nieves, president of Life Issues Institute. Abortion advocates often attempt to weaponize the trauma of women who have experienced sexual assault to try to justify abortion. Their efforts are particularly heinous, as in the aftermath of a sexual assault, victims often face an extremely difficult and painful road forward. The emotional and physical impact of sexual assault on the woman must be addressed, and a woman who's been violated in this way should be surrounded by love and support. Because talking about her experience is not easy for anyone, but the abortion industry tries to profit off of her. Today, we'll be speaking with three special guests. First joining us is Kim Elliott, an Amazon best-selling author of the book Choosing Life After Rape and co-founder of God the Romantic Presentations alongside her husband, Gary Elliott. We're also joined by Angelina Steenstra. She's the national coordinator for the Silent No More Awareness Campaign in Canada, and the president of the Second Chance Post-Abortion Healing. She had an abortion following a date rape as a teenager. We're also joined by Christy Hofferber. She's a passionate pro-life and adoption advocate who shares a powerful message about the value of every life. She herself was conceived under unimaginable circumstances, and her life was spared through the gift of adoption. Angela, Kim, and Christy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Grateful to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, the first thing I would love to ask from the three of you is for each of you to just briefly share your story with our listener. Kim, let's start with you.
Yeah, when I was in my mid-20s, I was somebody who was saving herself for love. I'd been bitten by the Disney bug, so I had always believed that there would be a love destined just for me. And into my young adulthood, I did continue to keep that conviction to save myself for love. A girlfriend and I made a weekend trip to Memphis, Tennessee, kind of did the Thelma and Louise thing, just wanted to break out over Easter weekend and enjoy ourselves. Unfortunately, that weekend turned out to be a rape experience for myself, and that was because of a date rape drug that had been dropped into one of my drinks. The result was me frantically coming back home and trying to forget that anything had ever happened. For the next 30 days, I just had haunting ideas of some what ifs, and by that month end, I had learned that one of those what ifs had actually become a demanding new reality, and I was actually pregnant. At that point, I always been pro-life, had been vocal about it, but once I was personally caught in that trap, the only thing I could think was, how am I going to get out of it? And honestly, fear became my closest companion at that point. And I did make an appointment for an abortion. And then following that, the weight of the event that took place finally broke me to tell my parents what had happened. And as I was explaining my plans for an abortion, it was my dad who interrupted. And he said, "Kim, abortion is murder, and we don't do that." And that was the first time I heard that I was no longer alone in this circumstance when he said, "We don't do that." So it really set me free to know I'm no longer alone in these circumstances or the decisions moving forward. My family was with me. Secondly, it renewed my mind to remember that, you know, in the case of rape, these pregnancies that take place, there's three people involved. One of them is the rapist who's a criminal and the one that deserves the punishment. The two other individuals are the innocent victims, and in this story was myself and my daughter. And therefore, my ideas turned around and I decided this was not a life I needed to protect myself from, but she was somebody that I needed to give my life for. So I made a choice for life. Long story short, I also pursued adoption plans, but did rescind and eventually brought my daughter home and raised her as a single mom.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kim. Mm-hmm. Angelina, how about you?
My experience of my first pregnancy took place in the context of a date rape. Also on an Easter weekend, I went to a party. And when I got there, I had this check in my spirit. I knew that I shouldn't be there, but I had lied about my whereabouts. So I went in and I shut down my conscience, if you will, by drinking, smoking the drugs that were going around the room. And then eventually the person who was my contact person for this party took me by the hand, walked me up a set of stairs, and we sat on a bed, and thus proceeded my first sexual encounter. And as I cried out, no, 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 it was too late and it was not respected. So from that, I felt very ashamed and defiled and dirtied. And I was carrying this secret of what happened, but it became clear to others that something had happened to me when I had morning sickness working at my job as a waitress in a family restaurant. So still not really aware that I was pregnant. I was thinking that I had the flu. So I exited from my job site and went to the staff room to try and recuperate myself. And then my colleagues said, Angelina, what's wrong? What happened? And I told them the story. And they said, oh, you might be pregnant. And if you are, there's not much time. There's a phone number in the newspaper. And if you call that number, you'll find help. Well, after two missed menstrual cycles, I panicked. I called the number because the home pregnancy test had come up positive, and I was really walked into the abortion industry. All my fears were used to really bring me into the mindset of abortion. You know, you didn't want to be a single parent. You're too young. I was 15. You want to finish high school. You don't want your parents to know what happened. So they actually led me through the steps to how to gather up the money, find a way to the abortion facility. And it eventually took me across the border into Buffalo, New York. And I walked into that facility, a girl who'd never participated in the death of another human person. And I came out completely changed, broken, and knowing that I had crossed a line and that I could never bring myself back to the other side. And so I would spiral down for 5-6 years before I would have through sex, drugs, and alcohol. And then eventually in my despair, I turned on the television one night in my loneliness, and there was an evangelical TV program airing. And at the very moment I turned the television on, I was invited to make a phone call if I wanted to change my life and to give my life to Christ. So I thought, what have I got to lose? And I made a phone call that brought me into a U-turn away from the darkness back into the light. And eventually I would meet my husband, get married, and expect to have many children, except that after 7 years of marriage, I still hadn't conceived. And at that point, I was rushed to emerge one evening, diagnosed with a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. And happily, I didn't die. And the loss of that little one is what brought me into a post-abortion healing experience. Because as I gathered up the story of this child who was about 8 to 10 weeks gestation, I began to ask the question, if this is a baby and we're naming this baby, what happened when I was 15? And I was actually led really by the Holy Spirit into a journey of post-abortion healing, which would later lead me into a ministry called Second Chance, collaborating with a priest who felt called to, back in the early 90s, to reach out to men and women that were hurting after abortion. And then eventually that would lead me to Silent No More Awareness Campaign. And in 2004, the campaign came to Canada. So happily, all things work unto good for those who love the Lord.
Well, Angelina, thank you so much for sharing. Christy, do you mind sharing your story with us as well?
I'm on the other side of things as an adoptee, and knowing from as young as I can remember that I was adopted, that was never hidden. However, I didn't know the circumstances behind it until many, many years later. And I learned after becoming married, being a mother, I knew that there was always something that I wanted to know more about my biological family. I just didn't know how to voice that because I never wanted to hurt my adoptive family, who was wonderful. I didn't want them to feel in any way that they were not enough, because they absolutely are. And I found myself on a mission trip with our church. My husband was a pastor, so we led many mission trips, and we were working in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and just looking at that devastation And it changed me. And looking at that and thinking, okay, there are things in my life that if tomorrow was gone in an instant, I have not reconciled. And that was one of the things that something was really tugging at my heartstrings. I wanted to know more about my biological family. So I started that search on my own. I started searching with a friend. I only knew very minimal information. I knew my parents had more, but I was afraid to ask for it. And when I hit roadblock after roadblock, one of which being the court system telling me we're not going to open your closed adoption file, I to this day don't know why. So I knew at that point I was going about it the wrong way. And that's when I went to my parents and I was very honest with them. And it's a very heavy subject, so I always want to lighten it up a little bit in the way that I picked up the telephone to call my parents. Again, not the right way to do things. But she said, I'm not going to do it over the phone. So I said, okay. And we hung up the phone and I walked 2 blocks over to their house. And in doing that, I learned that when I would have been 13 years old, my biological mother's name was posted in the paper. And my adoptive family only had this name by accident because it was incorrectly provided to them at my birth and adoption. So they knew her name all those years, but they also had, because she was a minor at the time, they had her parents' names and all of the names matched. And the headline was that the young girl was prosecuting her father for many years of abuse. And so my parents knew this a lot longer than I did. And I had always said, I don't want information, but I knew there was something. I could tell there was something there. And so that's certainly never what I expected to come home from this mission trip and think, oh, I want to go meet my family. I have people that I don't know. I had no idea that that was what was going on behind the scenes. I went into very selfish reasons. That mindset changed immediately. And the mindset went from, I need this for personal reasons, to, is she okay? After all that's happened to her, is she okay? Because the article went on to explain that I was not the only child conceived. There were actually 6. And of those children conceived, one was a forced miscarriage through physical violence. And then I was born hidden and placed for adoption. And the 4 additional pregnancies were hidden. And eventually she was led to the abortion facility to cover up his actions. And so I was the only one that survived of the 6 children. I didn't immediately make contact, but in searching, I found her profile on social media and I was staring in a mirror. Wow. I had no question. I was literally staring at someone who I looked just like, aside from I have short hair, she didn't. And so through additional prayers and a lot of, you know, really thinking things through and discerning, what do I do now? It was move forward, contact. I didn't want to contact her and bring up more trauma. And that's something that you may have heard before. I'm a reminder of what happened. However, I reached out, I prepared myself with as best as I could, no expectations. If she doesn't respond, I understand. I can't imagine what she's been through. If she does respond, then I want to welcome her into my life and let her know I'm okay. And I want to know how she is. And thankfully, she opened her arms and she responded within a day of me sending her just an email. And within a week and a half, I was traveling 2 states away to go and meet her. And I also found out that I have a half sibling. So she moved on with her life and I have a half sister. So I can say it's been a rocky road. I mean, there's been a lot of things, 2 very different lives lived, but we meet in the middle and I'm so grateful to have her and to have my half sister and my biological family. I never met my biological father and he has since passed, but I'm grateful to have met them and to continue a relationship with them.
Well, we are so grateful, Christy, to have you with us. How does it feel for you when you hear advocates for abortion try to use your existence as a justification for abortion?
It's certainly difficult because my life, just like any other, I'm created in the image of God. I have just as much value as anyone else. But it's used as an excuse in some cases or as an exception. And that goes for both sides of the equation, unfortunately. It's not just those who are pro-abortion in any circumstance. It's also some that I stand shoulder to shoulder with at the March for Life because they will hold an exception. That's why I share, you know, in helping other women, but also in helping other people who are pro-life to realize you know, good can come from something horrible. And I'm grateful for my life.
Well, and we've heard it said before, Christy, and it's so true. The circumstances of your conception don't impact the value of your life. Angelina, you've shared with us some of this information already, but expand on some of the trauma that you personally experienced when you had that abortion.
Well, there's layers to this trauma. So the first trauma was just all the angst and anxiety from the date rape to the discovery to the shame, the guilt, the silence, and then the day of. I remember seeing a reflection of myself in the window of the bus that I would get on to return home. And I saw myself and I remember thinking, I hate you. You'll never be able to fix this. That self-hatred spiraled me down for years into these patterns of self-destruction, trying to medicate the pain, the psychological, emotional pain. And happily, I didn't go down the road of suicide. I had come to a place where I was being severely tempted to just get out of the pain. So those are some of the after effects. And then the road back. If you take a wrong turn and you decide it's a wrong turn, one must retrace one's steps. And that journey began when I lost our son, Joseph Michael, through the loss of him being in the fallopian tube that ruptured. And as I gathered up that story, that was what began to open up for me these moments of recollection, because I really gave God permission to bring back, because I had totally pushed down and suppressed, because it was so accepted. You know, the sexual revolution led to, you know, a moral decline and separating sex from its context of marriage and monogamous relationship. It became like a journey toward disaster, really. But then getting married and going through those connectors, because the marital embrace became an abortion connector, babies, baby carriages, crying babies. And I didn't know, subconsciously, I was reacting all the time. And it was the short life and death of our son that would begin the process of healing as I began to gather up the story and gave God permission to bring back the memories. And he was so gentle, bit by bit. And it's ongoing at some level, because with every year that passes, we were never able to have more children. And so the infertility, which really isn't infertility, it's the consequence of a sexually transmitted disease. It had consequences that continued into our life. And so it's a process that goes on with God's grace. And the upside of that is that by saying yes to the grace of courage, because courage is not the absence of fear, it's fear overcome with prayer, the Lord just keeps taking me through it, and not just for my sake, but for the sake of others.
Well, Angela, the abortion industry loves to paint abortion as if it's a solution for women who have been abused. It doesn't sound like that was the case in your story.
No, and I would go so far as to say that people who conceived in rape or incest became victims to justify the decriminalization of abortion or the legalization of abortion. We were exploited twice, first in the act, and then using those acts to justify the dehumanizing of the baby and thus the ending of the child's life.
Kim, what would you say to that point, how abortion advocates try to use stories and experiences like what you lived through to justify abortion?
I think I would readdress again what I said earlier, in that the rape is a crime that has a criminal, and it's not the baby, it's the rapist. The rapist needs to be addressed in those circumstances. I came to understand early on the miracle of life. I actually watched a Nova video while I was pregnant, VHS tape, and I was changed and blown away at the miracle that's happening in a woman's body, to the point that once the conception happens, her whole body turns into protection mode and to nourish. So women have actually been designed to do this, first of all. But before that, even John 1:3 tells us that everything that has come into existence and has been created came through Christ. So I came out of that understanding that life begins in Christ. Therefore, conception is always holy even if the sex is not. And then moving forward, women are so much more than what the industry is going to let them believe they are. They are stronger than they know and understand. There are more pregnancy centers than there are abortion clinics. That means there is support, and it is voluntary love supporting these centers that are ready to be the we out of my story. We are going to come and we are going to step into this trouble, this problem, and we're going to see you through it and help you be fully educated in all your decisions. We are set up to help, and we are set up to help these women choose life and make the most out of it. Deuteronomy already gave us the answer. The answer is choose life. The promise is life for her first and then her descendants. And I think on the pro-life side of it, we really need to hit that a lot harder, that the promise is to her first and then her children. So even in that word, life is the definition of repair and wholeness and abundance. There is a promise there for women that would choose life. And I think that needs to be communicated as well. So, you know, for the abortion industry, I'll just in a very short answer say you're wrong. And I've got a story that I would tell. And I wrote my story out in a book about 2 years ago for that reason, so that the church and the pro-life movement has another story, because I know this is a hard case. I know this is an exception, but my life turned out exceptional as a result.
Angelina, I want to touch on a part of your story and highlight, as we speak about having that community and people to support you, the abortion industry took you at your lowest and they sought to profit off of you. They sought to coerce you into making a horrible decision. What would you say to other women who have that same pressure of the abortion industry weighing on them?
Well, I would say, you know, to recognize the illusions and the lies. They're false promises. It's not true freedom. There are consequences to our actions. And truly, we do have a free will and we can choose the direction. And I can tell you that if you go to our website, Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and read the testimonies, there's hundreds of testimonies of women who chose abortion and the consequence of that in their life. And so I would say, go in the direction of life. The Lord will provide. He will fill our needs, fill our emptiness. And the other beautiful thing is, when we choose life, we choose the other over self. And there's something about that, choosing that, that it keeps us moving forward. Whereas when I chose death, it brought me down a spiral toward death. The wages of sin are death. And it wasn't until my conversion, till my U-turn back to God, that I would begin to climb out of that pit of darkness. And so we can come out. We can turn around at any point in the journey, but it's incumbent on us to know it and to choose it, because there are only two ways, the way of pride and lies and the way of truth and humility.
Wonderful. Well, to all three of you, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, today's conversation really has been such a tremendous blessing. To hear from our guests and their unique stories, their unique perspectives on a very sensitive, a very touchy topic. You know, the abortion industry, as we've covered, really does love to try to weaponize and manipulate the suffering, pain, and trauma of these women in their darkest hour. They seek to profit off of them, falsely presenting abortion as if it was some sort of a solution where the woman would no longer suffer that trauma. She would no longer have to deal with the damage and the emotional recovery process that we've heard from all of our guests. But we know that that's not true. Their stories prove that that's not true. The abortion industry, as always, is not interested in the health, the well-being of these women. Instead, they're interested only in making money off of these women, exploiting them. And it's really a very shameful and an awful thing. And I'm so glad that we were able to have this conversation and to shine light on the truth of this situation, because it is a very touchy one. It is very difficult. And for you, our listener, I want to encourage you to share this show, but I also want to encourage you to visit our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find life-affirming resources, more information from our guests, so that you can join us as a partner in life and share this with your friends, your family members, your church community, so that together we can continue to get this vital life-saving information out there and change hearts and minds all across the country. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.